Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mark Chandler. He is the managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Now, Mark, it's been a wild start to 2021 when it comes to the markets. And this week, boy, oh boy, we've seen volatility pretty much across the board. And it seems like a couple of trends, like buy the dip for U.S. markets, quite frankly, any market, even global emerging markets, those are also off to a fast start. We continue to hit all-time highs in a lot of these markets. And the underlying commodities, those have been so volatile. We will get into a little bit of gold commentary later on, but I just want to take a step back and ask you, what are some of the main themes that you are playing or that you think are attractive investments this year and potentially even longer than just this year?
Yeah, sure. Well, happy new year. And like you say, we're off to what a crazy start. You think about what's happened in the markets. You think about those pictures from Washington. What a start to this year. And I think that in some ways, this has really just been a acceleration of some trends we've seen that have really been in place since the end of October. And you can look at this on the weekly charts because this is when the U.S. election was. It is like the markets have taken another leg since the election. And this is up for stocks globally, like you say. It has been higher yields generally, but especially more recently in the U.S., and we're going to talk about why. And thirdly, it's been bad for the U.S. dollar. And so I think that these forces are due for a correction, of course, especially in the foreign exchange market, where I tend to focus a lot of my time. But I think that you look at what, broadly speaking, these three forces really express reflation. And so as you think about reflation, when I talk to a lot of investors, it seems to me that the number one thing on their mind is inflation in 2021.
Well, in all fairness, we have seen inflation break evens continue to rise. The 10-year, I've noted this throughout the week, is up at levels we haven't seen since August of 2018. Now, again, these are just inflation expectations. And in all fairness, I think it was 2, maybe 3 years ago, I was hearing the same bullishness or at least outlooks for inflation to pick up. That didn't exactly happen. Inflation did pop its head over 2%, but then didn't really go much higher than that and turned over pretty quickly. Why would this year be different, Mark?
Yeah, so I think that here's the argument, and it's really three parts to it. The first part is almost what I'd say is a mathematical certitude. And here's the issue, is that what we are interested in here, remember, is the year-over-year rate of CPI. What happens is that, say, we get the January 2021 report, the January 2020 month results get dropped out. This is what we call the base effect. And so what happened last year, March and April in the U.S., prices fell sharply. I believe it was about a 0.5 and about a 0.8% decline month over month in March and then again in April, something on that kind of magnitude. Those numbers will drop out as we get into the spring and the year-over-year comparison. Those numbers get dropped out, and say that they're replaced with even zero, it'll still raise the year-over-year figure. So we should expect a statistical inflation scare in the spring, but then the comparisons get much better in the summer before flaring up again at the end of the year. That's the broad trajectory of the base effect: a scare in the spring, moderation in the summer, pick up again in Q4. So that's the one theme, the base effect, the mathematical component. Secondly, people think that a lot of the kindling for inflation is in place. Low interest rates, fiscal spending, central banks doing what the central banks have been doing, the asset purchases. They think that there's been a big loss of supply in a lot of the services. All those small businesses that have unfortunately been forced out of business, the bankruptcies and the failures. And that just as we get the vaccine and it begins rolling out and society can just begin normalizing, we have these bottlenecks with supply. So that's the third kind of factor, would be the macroeconomic kindling wood might exist for inflation. And the third thing, some people, and this is where I think that to your point about hearing the same story kind of over and over again, are these kind of structural type of arguments, claiming that the reason we have had low inflation for the last 30, 40 years is because of some big demographic shifts, including the incorporation of all those workers from China, Soviet Union, into the world economy, a big push, a big supply jump of labor, less capital. And that this favored the capital labor mix, the disparity of wealth and income, the financialization, but that those trends are over. And that these huge demographic shifts are going to begin seeing inflation rise again. So those are the three big things, the mathematical base effect, the kindling wood, and then these structural stories that have long shelf life.
Okay, that all makes sense. I get the argument that we could see inflation really starting to pick up, but that is just one side of the equation, because we need to take it a step further and say, what is the response, or will there be a response from central banks? And if we do see inflation really start to pick up, how does that impact money flows when it comes to the markets and investing?
Yeah, so I think that part of the kindling wood is the thinking that central banks like the Federal Reserve talk about the average inflation rate instead of a specific target. The ECB is going to modify their stance to make it a little bit softer. So there's the idea that the central banks want to encourage inflation as well. And I think that that's the part of the feedback loop, is that how the markets respond to policy and then how policy responds.
How do you think policy responds? Or does the Fed stay true to its word and not react if inflation gets over 2%? And who knows, even if it starts to move higher, say to 3.5%?
Yeah, well, I think that it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I put it this way to you, that they'll be able to see through some short-run noise as a base effect, just like I was able to paint out for you. I think that oftentimes people learn how to do that kind of thing in an undergrad economics course. But at the same time, I think that the Federal Reserve, like other central banks, will be careful about pulling it back too early. And what that means in the U.S. is the debate is not over what's going to happen in the first couple of months of the year, or even through the first half of the year. But as the vaccine rolls out, and if we can get more towards normality, or past it for normality, will the Federal Reserve taper this year? And some Federal Reserve presidents have already begun debating about this in public. And so I think that's probably the most interesting possibility of change later this year, but too early to make a definitive decision. It's much more, let's watch how these conditions emerge. And some Fed officials are willing to have that discussion later this year.
Yeah, we'll see. Man, the end of this year, it's a long way away when you consider everything that can happen and still all the uncertainties that we have just moving month to month. Let's also talk about another theme that you and I had touched on, I believe it was the later part of last year, but when we were chatting before recording here, you were letting me know again that you are focused on this theme of automobiles, but really the technology that goes into them and this broader acceptance of EVs. Look, there's a lot of interest in the EV market right now, and we're seeing the underlying metals do really well as well. How are you viewing this move towards electric vehicles, or at least the potential move towards electric vehicles?
Yeah, maybe it's kind of strange in a way. I live in New York. I grew up in Chicago, I learned how to drive as soon as I could, and drove sometimes for jobs. But now in New York, I hate cars. But I know that they're more than so for me, they're like a way to get from one place to another. Big tin cans, or aluminum cans, or some kind of metal steel cans. And I don't think that's the way it's going to be in the future. They're going to be smart cans. And what's going to really distinguish them are the computers. So that's why I was excited with hearing the news and the little reports about how the car companies, or some car companies, are talking to some computer companies. And I had thought about this about a year ago and began positioning myself for something like this. And not knowing exactly, it seems so fuzzy still. But I know it's a whole ecosystem. You think how important cars were for the industrialization, modernization, urbanization, suburbanization of like middle of the 20th century. So for the 21st century, the cars could still be very important. But it's the whole ecosystem. So if the I think one time a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the U.S. has one uranium company. One uranium mine, and one of the byproducts, or one of the metals often associated with the uranium, is used for batteries. And it also fits into so the ecosystem with cars, batteries, the metals needed, the battery producers. But then it also fits into another theme. I think a big, like a larger theme, investment theme, and that is the combination of economic nationalism and bringing back manufacturing to the United States or to other countries, like bring it back to Europe or Japan. And this is important when you think about this kind of these issues we're talking about for rare earths. These rare earths are these metals used in a lot of modern technology, both civilian and military. And the U.S. doesn't really make it, produce them, refine them themselves. So I think that's going to be moved in this direction as well. And so that's another favor for this sector that also feeds into these metals needed for batteries. So I think of it as a big ecosystem. And I know that sometimes, and now, you know, as we were talking about the markets, they've just begun this year with such a strong rally. But these are, that a lot of stocks seem very rich. But I think for me, it's an idea of developing, having some of these themes, and then looking for opportunities in which the theme is cheaper to put on.
So where does this theme stand then? Because you are right. A lot of these underlying companies and the companies that mine the metals that help supply these batteries, they have doubled, some even tripled or more in market cap on the back of sometimes not even much news. So there has been this broad melt up in the stocks.
Yeah, for everything. And so if we're right about this, it means that what happened, I think, is that in my experience, it'd be something like this, that even if you have a value investment and it participates in this frothy sort of like sort of melt up market, it doesn't prevent them from selling off. But typically those with the value might not sell off as much or might recover quicker. And so that's why it still pays, it seems to me, to be doing one's homework and knowing what we used to call vaporware out there. And so, yeah, so it pays to do your homework, buy value, buy things that have true underlying value, which makes it hard for some of these companies like that might not be showing a profit, like their uranium company. It might not be showing a profit, but if it's the only uranium mine, there might be something there that's worth investigating.
Yeah, it is very important to understand jurisdiction right now, because that does seem to be the move that we are seeing as countries, especially the Western countries, start to get a handle more on their domestic supply. Let's wrap it up, Mark, with a quick comment on the precious metals, gold specifically, because just this week, it's been a wild ride for gold. Gold started off the week up about $50, and then it faded a little bit, and today, gold is just getting absolutely hammered. On the futures market, it is down, as we're recording this, a little over $70, right down to about $18.40 on the futures. Again, this is still just trading in a wide range, but after the fast start and all the bullish comments that I heard to kick off the week, gold's really on the back foot to end this week.
It is, isn't it? This is just, I think it's taken people by surprise. But in some ways, I pointed a couple of things. First is people like myself who turned bullish gold thought it partly, the argument, at least one part of the argument, was that interest rates were low. Well, we've seen a sharp jump in U.S. interest rates. And I think that has taken some of the luster off of gold. But so you have a big jump in interest rates. So I say that's interesting to note. Secondly, is the rally in the cryptocurrencies, which is just itself seems to be mind-boggling. But I know that my friends who follow the sector very closely tell me that they've been trying to make this argument that that bitcoins is to the modern age what gold might have been to previous millennium. And of course, you know what's happened this, just in the past week. Bitcoin's up about 40%, and Ethereum, which has also been one of the big cyber currencies, up about 63%. It puts them both up over 100% over the past month. And of course, in this past month, gold hasn't done very much. In fact, gold is today, as we're speaking here, gold is below. It looks like it's going to settle below its 200-day moving average for the first time since early December. And so I'm just hesitant to think that gold, that basically other people might have bought gold during this time, but now that there's a cyber currency, they're buying the cryptocurrency. I just don't think the cryptocurrency, those flows are like anywhere comparable. And I think it's a bit early to make any kind of claim about that relationship yet. I'd say it's worth looking at. It's worth watching. But I tell people about the strong correlation between the number of deaths in a city, or the number of deaths and the number of churches. But the correlation, it's not like one's causing each other. It's that they're both correlated to the population size. And so I just wonder, maybe there's something else going on, the relationship between cyber currencies. Is money really moving into it? Or do you have price appreciation because supply is so limited? So it's just, it seems to me it's interesting to watch, but I think it's noteworthy that the gold is going back below its 200-day moving average. I often have found a rule of thumb that if it's about $50 below the 200-day moving average or so, so you make an envelope around that 200-day moving average, $50 to $100 below the 200-day moving average, and it's worth, I think, a buying opportunity to bounce by watching those momentum indicators as well, though.
Okay. Thanks for, providing your insights there. And yeah, I'm really trying to stay away from the whole argument or really picking a side on the comparison between Bitcoin and gold, because quite frankly, they haven't shown a whole lot of a relationship. And on days like today, when you see Bitcoin up so much and gold down so much, it's hard to say that just money's flowing out of gold into Bitcoin, because both could be going up together, both could be going down together, just in different degrees. But right now, yeah, clearly there's a lot of money going into Bitcoin, and to end this week, a bit of an exit out of the precious metals, but something for us to just continue to follow along with. Hey, Mark, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking the time on this Friday. It's great to have you back on in this new year. I look forward to continuing to chat throughout 2021. Have a great weekend, buddy.
And you. Good luck to everybody.